We go live by the miracle of modern technology, and we join Alistair Spence-Clark, of course, with our monthly update. Alistair, good morning to you, or should I say bonjour? Where the diablo are you?
You can say bonjour if you like.
Bonjour, Alistair. Where are you?
Je suis très bien. I'm in Val d'Isère at the moment.
Right.
I'm waiting for the snow to fall, which hopefully will come later on today.
Yes. Is it not,
the
is
life
not
of an accountant is a wonderful thing.
Yes, I know. I mean, this is one of the joys of, obviously, of remote working, you see. I mean, 20 years ago, we would have thought, you would have thought that he, you know, you would have thought, oh my goodness, it's November, and they've gone away, and what's going to happen to my financial affairs? But via the, A, you've got a great backup team, and B, you've got, obviously, wonderful connections up there. So we can talk to you about the latest bits of news and all the fun things of the world of tax.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I mean, you know, we're Zoom calling and everything, and we're actually seeing my clients more often these days because we can do it on video.
Marvelous.
So it doesn't matter where we are.
Tell us about the... Right, then let's kick off then with some bits and pieces, some news first, because there has been quite a lot going on. Tell us about the new fines that have been cancelled by the Superior Court in Madrid.
Yeah, this is the old story, the M720 fines, the M720, which is much hated by foreigners who find it very threatening, and it's expensive and it's tedious to have to deal with. It's been the subject of much debate, and the EU courts are, tribunals are, we're waiting for them to rule on the fines. The fines are absolutely brutal for just simply making mistakes, honest, simple mistakes, and the fines are crazy. Anyway, the Superior Court in Madrid ruled that the fines were illegal.
And just refresh my old grey matter. Was this the one for declaring all the? Is this the one for declaring all
foreign
your
assets.
Revenue? Sorry,
it's the foreign assets declaration. Yeah. So you know, if you've got a bank account, you know, in the UK for more than 50,000 euros, you have to declare it. But okay, fine, that's not such a terrible thing. But if you've got a portfolio of shares, and you know, each share, if you get one digit wrong, is a 200 euro fine or something, you know, it's just madness. Tax rules going over the top. Anyway, the great thing is we don't have to wait for the EU tribunals, although ultimately they're going to have to rule because they're going to have to force the Spanish government to change these rules. But we do have now a Superior Court in Madrid having ruled against these fines. So therefore, what I'm saying to people is anybody out there who has had to pay a fine because they made a mistake with the M720 or forgot to do it or didn't know they had to do it, anything of that nature. And we're talking fines of 10,000 euros plus for forgetting to do it. You know, they need to, they should file a repayment claim now. And if they don't know what I'm talking about, please contact us because, you know, we want the Spanish government to pay up for having ridiculous rules.
Yeah, I mean, it's good news that actually, you know, they're taking, this one has actually come to pass, because obviously it was one of the more arcane and downright ridiculous demands of the wonderful world of the Spanish tax system.
Yeah, it is. It's one of the worst aspects of the Spanish tax system, as far as I'm concerned.
Now, talking about getting stuff back, the plusvalía is coming up as well.
Another very, very long story. This has been going on since 2010, I think. Plusvalía, which is a very old tax, actually, it goes back to the early 90s, late 80s, has been ruled to be illegal by the Constitutional Court in Spain. Now, this is insane. You know, we've got a piece of law which has goes back over 30 years, I think. It's very important for the town halls because it's part of the revenue stream that they need to provide facilities for its population. And it's just been declared illegal. Why? Why is it illegal? Because it's insanely drafted. It's the most arcane. You talk lovely word arcane, and arcane and Spanish tax law go very well together, I can tell you. Plusvalía is an insane piece of tax law. We had town halls charging people plusvalía on the sale of their homes when they actually sold them at a loss.
Right.
These are people who bought a house in the 2007, say, when the prices were really high. They had to sell or decided to sell in 2010, 11, when the crisis hit properties, hit the financial markets. They actually made a loss, and then they got an assessment from the town hall for capital gains tax. Insane. And, you know, what is doubly insane is it's taken 10 years for this to actually come to court and be ruled by the constitutional court. So for 10 years, people have been forced to pay tax, which is basically illegal.
Yeah, but you know how you say that arcane is a word that applies to the Spanish system, but also you can have, in this, especially in this case, Kafkaesque.
A Kafkaesque in terms of the bureaucracy, yes, absolutely. I mean, we love it because it creates an awful lot of work. But, you know, it's not very positive for the experience of people living here. And so I'm saying to people, if you have paid plus valía in the last 4 years, because unfortunately we can't go back for more than 4 years, which I think is also illegal, incidentally, but somebody has to take that to the EU courts now. But certainly in the last 4 years, you should claim back the tax that you paid. So if you're not sure what that means, if you paid plus valía, sold a property, inherited a property, in the last 4 years, then contact us because we'd be very happy to advise you on that.
And presumably with a lot of people sold their houses because of, you know, say 15 years ago when the pound was at the heady heights of 164, 168, and then dropped. Yeah. We had a cooling down, to put it mildly, of the economy. A lot of people just sold and downsized them. So presumably it's not just, you know, a couple of cases. There could be a couple of thousand cases in this situation.
Oh, no, we're talking tens of thousands. Hundreds of thousands in Spain. In fact, you know, people are worried that the town halls, you know, won't bankrupt them. But, you know, they are seriously going to have to cough up serious amounts of money. I mean, we have a lot of clients where we have filed appeals. You know, there's an awful lot of people like us. Of course, there are a lot of more Spanish advisors. And they're all, you know, filing appeals to have their money repaid. So anyway, that's another piece of good news. Mm-hmm. Full of good news today.
Exactly. Yes, it must be that fresh mountain air. Now, we know that, you know, Spain and, you know, the coasts and the islands attract a lot of people from all over the world. It's one of the things that people, you know, come. It's an international community. Yes. It's an international melting pot. So. And if you have worked for perhaps the biggest international melting pot, that is the United Nations, we've got some information for you as well.
Yes. Very strange. If you previously worked for the United Nations in one of its many departments, and you are receiving a pension from the United Nations at the present time, the matter of is this taxable in Spain or not is actually incredibly contentious, because the main law book that we use, it's called the Memento Fiscal, is wrong.
Okay.
So the entire Spanish, I mean, it must be 80-90% of the Spanish tax profession uses the Memento Fiscal to as obviously a source of information. And unfortunately, it just has an error. It doesn't include some very important tax cases that went through the courts. And they rely entirely upon what the tax office has ruled. And so the tax office, you know, you ask the tax office a question, a formal question, and they give you a formal ruling. Well, the tax office is always going to rule in its favor. You know, it's a bit party, isn't it? So in this case, they said, well, no, United Nations pensions are not the same as United Nations salaries, because salaries for United Nations employees are exempt in Spain. And they said, well, pensions are not salaries. Well, the court cases, and there are two of them, basically ruled that the tax office was giving the wrong information to the public. And the book, the tax guide, quite correctly published this news, but unfortunately did not realize that there had been several actual cases which take precedence over the tax office rulings that actually say that pensions from the United Nations organizations are tax-free. And a lot of people are asking us this question. There's been a lot of confusion in the last few years, particularly for some reason, the last 6 months, we're getting a lot of inquiries. So I thought it was worth putting it out there on the radio, because I'm absolutely certain there are a lot of people paying tax on their pensions, and they shouldn't be paying tax.
Let's move away from that, because the situation with this, that, and the other, we've had an interesting 18 months, shall we say, Alistair. A lot of people have been working from home, and a lot of people are thinking, you know, I could do my job, and I don't have to be in Rochdale. Nothing was wrong with Rochdale, obviously, but I could come and do this.
Place.
I could come, exactly, but I could come and do this rather than in Rochdale. I could go and do it in Roquetes del Mar, for example.
Absolutely right. And you can enjoy the sun, the wonderful lifestyle, and the relatively low cost of living in Spain. And you can practice your Spanish and enjoy the culture. You can work in Spain remotely for a UK company. We're getting a lot of inquiries about this, and it's obviously due to COVID and sort of change reality of us being all work from home. And so we're getting a lot of questions. So I thought it'd be worthwhile putting this out there on the radio as well, saying, yes, if you want to work in whilst living in Spain, you want to work for a UK company or Norwegian company, whatever, yes, you can do it. And there are obviously there are complications because, you know, it's the Spanish system. It's not the same as the UK system. And I've published an article on this on our website, which goes into it in considerable detail. So I won't bore everybody on this. But basically, you've got two ways of doing it. You can either be self-employed.
Right.
You can have a contract of services as opposed to an employment contract. In which case, if you're self-employed, you join the social security system as an autónomo. And you pay your social security, which is for the first 12 months, 60 euros a month, about 150 a month for the next year, the next 6 months. And then, you know, it's subsidized for the first 2 years, which is relatively modest amounts of social security. And you then have to join the tax system. Now, again, no real drama. It takes a day or two to go into the Spanish tax system. And you then file a quarterly income tax return. Unfortunately, you have to file a quarterly VAT return, IVA return, which is tedious because there's nothing to pay. Because when you charge people abroad for your services, it's exempt of VAT, either in Spain. But you still have to file. So, you know, the tedious bit is that you have to file, I think it's 11 tax returns a year. but, you know, Hester is do that. We do that, you know. It's no big drama. So you can be self-employed, which, of course, a UK employer would be quite happy with because they're going to save a bucket of national insurance contributions.
Right.
Okay. Now, the alternative is actually to take a UK contract of employment, migrate it to Spain, register it in Spain, and become employed in Spain for a UK company. And we do this an awful lot. So what we do is we take the UK company, we get powers of attorney, we act as representatives, and we create a registration in Spain in the labor, social security system, and tax system for the UK company. So the UK company basically does what it does in the UK, files effectively PAY returns and national insurance returns, but they [S2] Right. [S1] Do it in Spain instead. Of course, there is a bureaucracy involved, of course. Spain is not unusual in this at all. It's a bit more tedious perhaps in Spain than it is in the UK, but you know, that's what we do. So I'm saying to people, if you want to work for a UK company in Spain, you can also have a normal employment contract. Now, there are a few things.
Right.
First of all, that Spanish employment law is not the same as UK employment law. There are differences. You know, we have endless and wonderful bank holidays. we have minimum wage. We have all sorts of things. You know, you can't work more than 40 hours a week, et cetera, et cetera. So we have some conditions which, so we have to take a UK contract of employment and we have to adapt it to Spanish purposes, which of course is fine. There's no big drama in that. It takes a bit of time, but that's all. And the other thing that you have to be very careful of, and the employer has to be careful of, is that if somebody works for you full time and they have effectively, they work for you, you know, then you can't convert that real employment into self-employment because self-employment implies that a person has a certain degree of latitude. You know, they might have more than one customer. Mm. They can work when they want. They don't have to take holidays. They can take holidays when they feel like it. That's because they're self-employed. If a person is employed, there are certain things which make it obvious that they're employed. So you've got to be a bit careful not to make somebody self-employed when they are actually employed.
Yeah.
Because then you expose the employer to some serious problems.
Can I just just come in on a point. Is this going to be affected by El Brexit? Because you would think that, you know, so you're living in Spain, you're working for a UK company as your primary, if you're doing it as autónomo or as a freelance, then you're doing it, you know, this is your primary client, but you have to, you know, you presumably have some more. But is it going to be relatively easy then to say, well, I'm working for, I don't know, Jones's Meats and I'm a buyer for all sorts of products, but I do it from my house in Roquetas del Mar. They're not going to say, ah, well, you really need to be able to do this. You know, the British company needs to set up a European outlet for you to come through. You can actually get around it that way.
Yes, because of the double tax treaty between the UK and Spain, having somebody working in Spain does not imply what we call a permanent establishment. They don't have to have a proper setup in Spain. They are basically just set up for one purpose and one purpose only, which is to employ people. We have UK clients that employ 20, 30 people, the programmers. You know, it's actually quite popular. Now, having a bunch of programs working in Spain does not mean that you have a permanent establishment. It's not subject to corporation tax. All it's doing is employing people, which does not imply anything because of the double tax treaty. So the employer does need a bit of advice. It's not complicated. It's every day for us. So right. Anybody out there who has been talking to their employer in the UK or Norway or France or whatever, and they would like to work in Spain whilst working for that company, contact us, because there's no big drama. There's a process, and the employer is protected with good advice, and you carry on as you are.
Okay. Now, this then brings us on to the next point, which is, can I base myself in Spain and use a UK company to do business in the UK?
Yes, you can. The question is, should you? Is it a good idea? This is the business of using a UK company because you're, let's say you're a programmer, and you're an internet programmer, and you have, you know, 10 or 15 clients. You help them with their Facebook advertising or whatever, and you are charging them, and you're using a UK company because you have UK clients and they want to deal with a UK company. They don't want to deal with a Spanish company or a Spanish individual necessarily. They find that a bit threatening, perhaps. So yeah, UK company makes complete sense in those circumstances, but not always. Sometimes it's actually a lot easier to set yourself up as a self-employed person. You know, I've explained it's very simple. There are virtually no costs attached to that, apart from a bit of registration and sort of monthly fees for doing the paperwork. You then belong to the Spanish system completely. You're part of the system as a self-employed person. And it often works better for people to do that, but not always. Sometimes it's better to have a UK company because you're dealing with the UK market. And I think it's perfectly sensible. It's not threatening. It's not fraudulent. It's just a choice that you make, and it's justifiable. So, but choosing between those two, there's quite a lot of things to consider. There are a lot of factors. There's corporation tax in the UK. There's income tax in the UK. There's social security, national insurance. There's the question of, are you controlling a business in the UK from Spain, which causes Spanish corporation tax to arise. There's a lot of factors in this, and it is something definitely that a person needs to seek advice on. I'm not just selling my wares here, but yeah. You know, these are questions that we get continuously. I'm on the radio to explain that all these things are possible, and it's about clarity. It's about clarity of advice, making sure that people make the right choice, because there are choices. Sometimes you make the wrong choice, waste money,
yeah,
waste time, frustration, problems that you didn't expect later on down the line. I'm saying that these things are all possible. You know, but back from the pure employment, as I mentioned earlier on, to the business of actually having your own business, but preferring to use a UK company. And then the question arises, you know, should I be receiving dividends? Should I be receiving salary, et cetera, et cetera? There's a raft of issues to bear in mind.
And I was going to say, this is where you need specialist advice as well, because if you go to your normal Hestor and you say, I want to deal with a British company, and if they aren't up to speed with the continuing, the ebbs and flows, the flotsam and jetsam, if you like, of the system, they could just go, no, it's not going to work. You know, it's a Brexit. You know, you have to, you know, you're in Spain, you have to have a Spanish company, you will, you know, you'll be taxed here, there, and bleeding everywhere. So obviously with somebody to yeah, steer you to the calmer mill ponds, perhaps, of the system.
Yes, many Spanish advisors give fantastic advice. I'm not saying otherwise, but inevitably, a Spanish gestoría particularly is not going to understand the UK NIC system, the national insurance system, not going to understand UK dividends and salaries. So these are all important things to bear in mind. You know, it may be very important to you to stay in the UK system for the purposes of receiving a small salary, to keep your pension contributions alive in the UK. You know, your state pension is important to you later on in life. And, you know, making decisions today can affect those pension rights later on, and then it's too late, because you've got to make your contributions as you go along. So this is the pension contribution thing is just one of a raft of individual things. So, people like us who are cross-border, you know, we obviously have an advantage because we understand both systems.
Okay. Alistair, if you want to lead somebody gently by the hand from the beginner's slopes of tax advice through to the black runs of filing your quarterly and annual tax filings, where can they find you?
They can find us, first of all, most importantly, on the internet. We publish, I think we've got several hundred articles now, on stuff like things I've been talking about.
Yeah.
So there's a raft of information out there which people can get for free, and delighted for people to go in there and find it. So SpenceClark.com is where you can find all that wonderful information.
And
or you,
I was just going to say, it's also very, very readable as well. If that's a correct word to read, it's you know, they're put in quite plain English, so that's always good to be able to have
a look
at.
Well, thank you. We really make an effort to try and simplify things and make it possible for people to read. I hate articles which quote this article, you know, this piece of law, you know, et cetera. Sometimes you need to, but generally speaking, people don't need that information. They want to know what makes sense.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm glad you say that, because we do make an effort to make it in plain English. Or you can phone us, and we're on 952-822-2943. And we're delighted to talk to people over the phone, Zoom calls, whatever, give them a bit of free advice, no problem at all. And if they like us, then fine, they'll become our clients. But we're not going to say, we're not going to talk to you unless you pay us. We really want you just to, you know, talk to us, and then if we get on, fantastic.
Well, Alistair, okay, as always, good to hear from you. Enjoy the petit déjeuner. Enjoy the falling. Please let us know when the first snows fall on the mountains. I'd be delighted to hear about that. You can give us a.
It's going to be later. It's actually falling now, Giles. You won't believe it. As we are talking, the first flocon, as they call them, the premier flocon de neige,
yes,
are arriving as we speak. It's very exciting.
Well, you may have flock on, but I'm going to flock off, and we will see you, Alistair.
I say, Giles, that was a bit strong.
we'll get to you soon. Alistair Spence-Clark, live. Cheers. From the slopes of where were you again, sorry?
Val d'Isère, near the French Alps.
Near the French Alps. I thought I'd play out with this. Thanks very much.
So cheers, Charles.
Take care. No.